This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk with a council member from a village in Bavaria that has made all of its dreams come true by selling renewable energy, and reflect on the possibilities of making the same thing happen here in Port Townsend. So now, let's go inside the Compass. When the small Bavarian agricultural village of Vilpoldsried set out to improve its energy footprint 20 years ago, it was not out of a sense of duty to save the planet from any perception of impending calamity by means of global climate disruption. Rather, it was seen by the 2,500 townspeople as a way to raise money for some pet projects, like a new sports hall, theater stage, and a retirement home, according to town council member Günter Mugele, who was brought to Port Townsend last week by Jefferson County's Energy Lunch Program to talk about the rousing successes of the German Model Energy Village, which now generates about five times the power it uses from renewable sources at a profit of about $5 million annually. How did they do it? And could we do the same thing here in Port Townsend? Those were the questions on everybody's mind at the Full House event at the Port Townsend Yacht Club Thursday. I managed to take Mugele aside for a quick interview as the crowd gathered in the next room. Why don't you tell me why you're here?
Well, the reason is that David Brown from Port Townsend, he came to my village 1 year ago. And the reason was that he found us, I think, in YouTube. He saw a video of our village, and he traveled to Switzerland and visited some friends, and he decided to come to our village. And he contacted me, and we spent a whole day in my village, and I showed him what we did the last 20 years. We're Germany quite famous so-called energy village. And that's the reason why David came to our village. And, well, since last year, we stay in contact, and he always tried to bring me over here and invited me. And finally, he was successful.
Well, so give me a little bit of history. I mean, how is it that you became the energy village? I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, it means, well, we started... almost 25 years ago when I became council, and our whole council changed. We elected a new mayor, and we were quite a young group, and we just thought about future. We came together and collected ideas for the future. We collected everything what was missing in our village and what we would like to have, and it was a whole list we didn't have. And
what was on the list?
On the list was, for example, easy things like a sports hall, a gymnasium, a swimming pool, stuff like that, a theater, all that stuff that was missing, doctor house and stuff like that. Yeah, and one of the points was that we realized that we spent a lot of money for energy. We live in an area where it's quite cold in winter. We have a lot of snow, and therefore we needed a lot of oil and gas for heating, for our heating systems. And we realized that most of our money is just spent for energy. And we also realized that it's not only the money which goes out, it's also we are going to destroy our environment, and you could smell it in winter. And we still suffering a little bit from Chernobyl, from the nuclear fallout.
You're still seeing effects from that. You're getting fallout even today.
The fallout is gone, but it's still, for example, not possible to eat mushrooms in our area, and the wild pigs, they still have to be destroyed because you cannot eat them. They are still polluted. Yeah,
that's that much radioactivity in the soils.
Yeah, it's still activity, and it will be probably the next.
Was climate disruption a part of your motivation as well, or was that not really on the radar yet at that point?
Not 25 years ago. It was just the energy point, and. Well, then we decided to try to produce as much energy as possible, to produce it ourselves. We didn't know how, because 25 years ago, nobody talked about renewable energy, and nobody knew anything about it, but we just fixed the aims. And then we started to check what possibilities do we have, what is possible, what is feasible. And that's the way how it started. And meanwhile, we have the advantage that we work in this point since more than 20 years. We have the experience, and we could realize many things. And meanwhile, we are at the point we produce five times more electric energy than we need in the whole village. And we produce around 70% of our heat in a renewable way. The aim is to produce 100% of the heat as well.
So how are you producing the heat? That's always a difficult one. I mean, it's...
Yeah, meanwhile, most of the heat is produced by so-called CHPs, what means combined heat and power engines, and they are run by biogas. We have some active farmers. They have biogas digesters. And meanwhile, they pump their biogas into the village, because most of the farms are outside. They pump it into the village, and there we use in the whole, we have seven of these gas engines.
Explain a biogas digester to me, because I mean, does that mean like methane? You're producing methane mm-hmm. gas.
Biogas is a mixture. The most part is methane, but it's also some it's CO2 in it, and a little more different gases. So it's not pure methane, but it's totally okay, or the quality is good enough to run engines with it. And in our area, most biogas digesters work with between 50% and 60% of manure. Because our farmers are dairy farmers, mm-hmm. they use the manure, they use silage grass, and they use all kind of biological material, whatever they can get, apples, potatoes, everything. It has to be biological, and then you can start this process, this chemical process, where you just take the methane and the biogas out of it. The only problem is to produce heat, that the most farms, I think here it's the same thing, the most farms are not located in the center of the village or the city, they are outside, and you cannot transport the heat, what means the hot water. Actually, it's just cooling water from these engines. You cannot transport this hot water into a village over kilometers or miles. And that's what our farmers realized and said, okay, if we are not able to transport this hot water, the heat, we transport...
Because it would like lose its heat in the pipeline.
Right, you would have too much loss on it. But you can transport the gas. And therefore, they installed their own gas pipelines. They did it themselves, the farmers installed it, and now they pipe the biogas directly to the city.
So this is another revenue source for the farmers. I mean, they're actually selling the gas in the city and yep. warming that way. So it's not a municipal project. It's...
No, that's the special thing. All our installations, it's not done by the municipality or by the state. It's all these installations are private installations. The PV is private. The windmills are private. The biogas digesters are private. That's a special thing. We call it citizens' participation. And more than 300 citizens participate in the windmills. So there are
How many windmills did you put in?
We have in the whole, we have 11 windmills now. We are just two are under construction in the moment.
And those are all privately owned?
Yeah, all privately owned. Yeah.
But I heard that these projects had actually, in the end, funded your sports facility and the library and all of the things that you had been dreaming of. But those were actually put in by private citizens then?
Yeah, that's definitely true, because we are producing energy, and we are producing much more energy than we need. The heat is one point. The heat is to 100% used in the village, but the main point is to produce electricity. And we sell this electricity to the grid, to the energy companies, and this money comes back. This comes back to the village, to the private owners, and also some tax comes back. And together with these projects, we were able to finance, for example, a sports hall and stuff like that. It's not 100% financed by this renewable energy, but it was one very important part of it.
But the town, anyway, was able to do this without extra taxation or debt financing?
Sure, the town didn't finance anything. We didn't pay subsidies or stuff, but we have in Germany, we have our renewable energy law, what was very important. It started in the year 2000, and this renewable energy law regulates the payback, the feed-in tariffs for whenever you start. You have a contract with the energy company for 20 years, and this law fixes the prices, the feed-in tariffs for your produced energy. That was very, very important. Because then it's quite easy to calculate, I receive, it's depending on the year when you started. In the year 2004, for example, when the first energy law for PV installations started.
These are basically energy credits. I mean, they
right.
I see.
Yeah. Right. Well, in this year, 2004, these credits were really high. Actually way too high to be profitable for the energy companies or for the state, but it was necessary to get started. Meanwhile, these credits are quite low, but they still exist, and the advantages that you have still, you have a warranty for 20 years. So you know exactly when I start to produce renewable energy. I know what I receive the next 20 years for every kilowatt hour I produce.
So that predictability then allows you to make the projection and calculate whether it's going to be profitable or not. So why don't you describe sort of the full array? So you have the biogas digesters, you have windmills. Are there also solar arrays?
Sure, we have. Well, I have it in my presentation. Maybe you have a chance to watch it. I have all the numbers. Meanwhile, the highest amount of energy comes from our windmills. That's around, I would say, 300% of the energy
You actually use, right?
Yeah. Then the next highest point, around 120% from this amount of energy we need, this comes from these CHPs, these biogas engines. Mm-hmm. What means even if we have no wind and no sun, we still have more than 100%, what is very important. That comes from, and these biogas engines are running 24 hours. So they are running during the night, no problem, many years. And that's really important for us, because now we can prove that that's a problem from renewable energies. Renewable energies, that it's always changing.
Right.
Sun is changing, wind is changing, and you can never be sure whether it works or not. If it's a dark, cloudy day with no sun and no wind, a lot of energy companies have problems because they don't have enough energy. But we can prove, together with this mixture, that's the special thing in our village. We have the mixture, and we always have more than 100% energy.
So the digesters really make the difference, because that's a fuel that you can burn at any time, and it's a fairly constant source as long as the dairy farmers stay in business.
Yeah. Same with the hydropower, but we only have a very small part of hydropower because we don't have big rivers and big lakes. We use it wherever possible, but it's the smallest part. And actually, you just have these four possibilities. You have wind, sun, you have water, and biomass. That's it. And these are null combinations. These are the four main parts of renewable energy.
So at this point, you've got all of the projects installed that you were looking for at the beginning. It sounds like you've got your sports arena and your library and what else? I forget. But so what are you looking to do with your profits going forward?
Well, actually, we are still investing. Most of the money which comes into the village, and we're talking about around 5 million euros every year, which just comes from these renewable energy installations. We are still investing and we are still going forward. The main problem now...
So you're expanding your capacity.
Yeah, to expand capacity and also to solve the upcoming problems now. Actually, we in Bavaria, we don't have the problem that the energy companies don't take our energy, because we are lucky to live at the border to Austria, and Austria, they have quite good capacities for water storage. They always take our energy and pump the water to a different level, and then they can create energy with hydropower.
Right.
And sell it back to Germany, which is quite nice for Austria, for our neighbors. They like it very much, and it's okay for us. But in the north of Germany, they already have the problem that they have, on windy days, they have too much energy, and they don't know what to do it, because you cannot destroy energy. You can change it. Maybe you can store it if you're lucky, but you cannot destroy it. And we don't have the storage capacity in Germany in the moment. And that's the biggest challenge if you want to switch to renewable energy. You have to find storage solutions.
Well, I have a friend who actually may have the solution for you, because he's been running a company for quite a few years that compresses air.
Yeah.
So you've got bottled wind,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can then use that to power engines or whatever. So have you looked into compressors as a way of storing energy?
Not up to now. We are looking in all directions. To my opinion, we need we have technologies to store energy, but up to now they are not used in the right way, or not enough used. To my opinion, we need, first of all, we need the energy mix, the use of all these four possibilities. And in the next step, we need a storage mix. We need water storage, we need gas storage, we need power to gas, power to fuel, power to heat, and all that stuff. We have mechanical storage possibilities, chemical storage, electrical storage, all kind of. We also need battery storage. And if we would use all these possibilities, I'm totally convinced that it's possible to switch to 100% renewable energy worldwide. That's what we need, because that's the only solution for our climate change and the climate problem we have. And we are all suffering under this climate
change. So how is climate change affecting you at home?
I think it's we are living on almost the same latitude than you guys over here. We are, our village has a latitude of 47.7, so we can feel it like you. This year we had the hottest summer, for example, the hottest summer ever. Our lakes are getting warm. People are suffering. It's getting dry. The water level is going down, stuff like that, and we have catastrophes. Maybe not like in the US, but the weather is getting extreme, and everybody can feel it. And that's the main problem of, I think, of our century.
In this PowerPoint presentation, Mugla detailed step-by-step how the village of Vilpodsrid replaced outdated oil furnaces in all the houses with a village-wide hot water heating system that burned locally produced wood pellets and biogas in electricity-producing engines that pumped their radiator water into breadbox-sized heat exchangers to heat houses, offered incentives for the addition of photovoltaic arrays on rooftops, erected wind turbine towers, and then quite recently demolished a couple of them to replace them with taller, more efficient state-of-the-art towers, at a profit, and even put in place a completely natural water treatment system that uses reeds and bogs to clean the town's wastewater. When the slideshow was over, I buttonholed Local 2020 Energy Action Group member David Brown, who was the person most directly responsible for bringing Mugla to Port Townsend.
It was a link on the Local 2020 Energy Action Group or something, and I just clicked on a link, and there was this thing about Vilpodsrid, and I'm like, that is fantastic. That's awesome. And I just happened to be going to Switzerland, and so I thought, geez, this would be a fantastic opportunity to see this place. So I did. I drove over to Vilpodsrid and met with Gunter, and he took me on a wonderful tour of all the things that we've just seen in his slide presentation. It's a wonderful village, and it is not only energy self-sufficient, but it actually exports green energy to the rest of the country. It was just a lot of luck that I happened to stumble upon Vilpodsrid. Of course, it's a wonderful thing that I did, because it's such a wonderful example of what we need to be doing.
Well, now, I'm sure that you've been thinking about that, and I've been thinking about it for about an hour now as I've been, like, watching this, but, I wonder if you can sort of give me the benefit of your longer reflection on that and what you think we might replicate most easily in Port Townsend, I mean, from your examination of it.
Well, unfortunately, with the political system that we have here, it's not as easy as it is in Germany, but I have to go back to when the fellow that really got it started in Vilpodsrid was Wendelin Einsiedler, a farmer, and he took it on in his own initiative and his own money to build a biodigester to produce methane, which then runs a 250 kilowatt generator, and there are things that can be done without too much government involvement, but we're constrained here by the fact that even though it's mandated that the electricity companies must take that power that you generate, if it's not economically viable, then nobody's going to do it because not many people are going to do it. There, not many people are going to spend thousands of dollars just because they want to do something good for the community. So, in order for it to have that economic viability, there has to be some kind of incentives, which doesn't have to be that much now that solar panel costs have come way down. It's such a complex issue. We've got so many different governmental agencies that are a part of this electrical energy production question. Then you've got BPA, you've got the federal government, and you've got local government, and you've got zoning regulations, and you've got so many things. And so,
what, they don't have these things in Germany? I mean,
they're not as constrained as we seem to be. Another problem that we have here is that, as Gunter pointed out, our electricity is so cheap already that it makes it very difficult to sell this to a public which is, like most people, interested in, you know, the money that they're putting into and taking out of their pocket. So it's a complex thing, but...
Another thing I was reflecting on is a huge part of the success there was with their wind power, and from what I've heard from people who
no, the Olympic Peninsula is not really a particularly great place for wind power.
Well, but I'm sorry to say this, but I hate to hear that kind of thing because it's all just speculation, and it's speculation not based on really knowing the wind situation here. There are people that make their living off of developing wind farms that, based upon the large scale wind map of this region, say that there are exploitable wind resources on the Olympic Peninsula. So I would rather that we do a wind assessment study to see if that's true or not, rather than just saying, oh, well, there's not much wind here, and so let's forget about it. But besides wind, there is solar, which Andy Cochran of Power Trip Energy has proven is an effective way of producing green energy in this area. And so we could be doing that. But to get back to the other question that you put to me, and I wandered around trying to answer it, what I would like to see done is that we move forward with forming a company that has the stated purpose to produce the infrastructure that we need to produce the electricity. The second thing, and it has to happen pretty much simultaneously, is that we get a political mandate from the local governing entities that says, yes, we're going to not stand in the way of this electrical development. And if we could possibly, through state government, get monetary incentives, that would be good too. But it's a two-pronged approach that has to happen if we're going to see any large-scale utility green power produced here locally.
There are incentives in place for community solar projects, for example, and yes. You know, like of course, federal incentives also for putting solar plants. However, I believe that state community solar incentive is about to run out in 2020, which doesn't give the kind of lead time that, I mean, he was talking about having incentives guaranteed for 20 years, and we don't have that.
You need to have PPAs. Power purchase agreements that are for 20 years to guarantee that somebody that's going to invest millions of dollars is going to get their money back. Otherwise, nobody's going to make those kind of investments. But you remind me of one of the specific things that constrains us here is that the PUD, with its contractual relationship with BPA, Bonneville Power Administration, can only add 1 megawatt of power to the grid without renegotiating the contract. And that 1 megawatt can only be added in 200 kilowatt increments. And so 1 megawatt is not a whole lot of power. And so we need to do something to change that.
So he was talking about adding gigawatts and terawatts.
Well, yeah, they're adding, you know, peak, you know, several megawatt peak power, and which translates into gigawatts, hours of electricity.
Right.
You know, the community here is a very progressive community. You know, we have the highest hybrid Toyota Prius ownership in the state and probably in the country per capita.
I believe the most solar arrays on the roofs, too.
In the state, on a per capita basis for a community this size. So, we've got that kind of political will, as it were, and we just need to get mobilized to do this, there's no discovery that needs to be done. There's no studies. There's no trying to figure out whether it works or not. I mean, we know it works around the world. We've got Germany and specifically Wildpolsried that shows that we can do this. And all it takes is putting the money up and tying the solar panels and the windmills to the grid and running our houses off of green electricity.
The Energy Lunch Program convenes at 12:30 p.m. at the Port Townsend Yacht Club on the third Thursday of each month. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.